Hey guys, it's Blue Gal. It seems like every week these days we recorded our podcast this week prior to a major news event. Our hearts are with the city of Dallas this weekend and with all the protesters across the country who stood up peacefully against violence and for justice. Our love and hope for healing to the Dallas Police Department and their families. And thanks to our listeners for their understanding that in days like these we simply can't keep up with events as they unfold.
You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 8th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Shiny Objects Lab, your number one source for secretly manufactured distractions. It's the Professional Left with Drip Glass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Drip Glass.
Hey, Blue Gal. How you doing?
There have been a lot of distractions this week.
Yes. And we'll get to them.
We will get to them. I want to start with the shootings.
Yep.
Even though that's a sad thing to have to start with, I think it's important.
Mm-hmm.
Joanne Reed on Twitter last night used the word despair.
Yeah.
To talk about the reaction of the shootings of both Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. Mm-hmm. And
I've heard that word a lot in the last day.
Despair?
Yeah.
Yeah. Always in relation to the shooting or other things?
Yes. And how do... And the unavoidability of it and how not to, you know, crack under it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The mother of Alton Sterling was on CNN last night saying that, you know, we, meaning African-American mothers, teach our kids that you comply. You comply. You always comply. You do what the officer says. And you show him your hands and you comply. And the reason you comply is so that you don't get shot by a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you comply and you get shot anyway? And at that point, what reason is there for lawfulness? What reason is there for you know, any respect for the uniform?
Right. If the uniform won't clean itself up,
yep.
If police will not drum out of their midst, cast mm-hmm. out of their midst, people who are either too stupid or too frightened or too trigger happy or too
or
racist.
Poorly trained or whatever it is, whatever the cause of this is. Someone did send out a press release from a university somewhere, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but mentioning that. First of all, I mean, it's way past time for a national conversation about how we train police officers and how we organize police departments so that, I'm sorry, I'm not losing my voice. I'm really just losing my will to talk about this.
Right. Oh, I know.
The national conversation we need to have about how police departments are organized within a community. The person who... it was involved in a university level with police use of force and was an expert, said something to the effect of, we train these police departments and we're always training them for the worst possible scenario. And so when there's a bombing or when there's a kidnapping or when there's a murder or when there's a you know, violent act, and we don't spend nearly as much time training them for, you know, play jump rope with a kid on the street, talk to people.
Right.
A regular traffic stop that does not have an incident where the person is complying,
mm-hmm.
where you know that you are in charge of this situation and it's not dangerous. But if you're trained from day one that you have to be prepared for the person to kill you, then of course you're going to be trigger happy. And that's not an excuse, because I do think there's racism in police departments. It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Pretty clear. But those are our And I don't want to say white America, but it turns out that seems to be what it is.
Yeah.
And that has been our history since before the Civil War, that law enforcement was there to control the black population.
Yeah.
You know, this is a long history we're dealing with. And we got to change it. And I was thinking today, too, about Donald Trump and our relationship to what happened in the past 48 hours, because we're recording this Thursday night, and the idea of making America great again. And it seems to me that this ideal that we've talked about a lot of making America great again means returning it to 1950s values of white versus black, right?
Yep.
That, you know, black people are out of sight and out of power.
Everyone knows their place.
Everyone knows their place, and whites are on the top.
Right.
And that's what making America great again means. It doesn't mean stopping the shootings and stopping the police brutality. Making America great again means stopping the videos and stopping
right.
the stories and stopping the voice and making sure that Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization.
Right.
Because, and if anything in the world points to how this goes right back to the Civil War and, you know, slaves that have escaped slavery and recovering those slaves, it's Bill O'Reilly saying Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization or is a crime organization or is somehow unlawful. So the fact that we have social media now, that we have everyone have a camera and we saw film of this, makes making America that kind of great again impossible. Thank God.
It does. It does. It there's no way. The fact that this woman had the presence of mind to live stream something on Facebook
mm-hmm.
as her boyfriend was dying in her arms
mm-hmm.
because the only way that she was going to save her own life and possibly his, or at least make sure that there were no questions afterwards or it wasn't covered up, was to videotape it immediately.
Mm-hmm. That was her only defense, was her phone. Was her was the camera. That's all she had between her and death.
And to stay very calm and talk in a very even tone while the cop lost his mind.
Mm-hmm. And she was in shock. I mean, a lot of people have said today that her presence of mind was also what they call dissociative.
Yeah.
Where you're in shock and your body is not your mind is not paying attention to what your body is feeling. It's just going through the motions.
Right.
And people go through that during times of extreme stress. And so not to diminish in any way her courage in being there,
mm-hmm.
but this was, I mean, it was shocking to watch it. So of course she was in shock too. And,
but she,
that the presence of that camera and her ability to that was a protection for her, that she was able to dissociate and actually keep talking. And I love how she kept asking for prayers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that to me was a nonviolent. It harkened back to the days of Martin Luther King, where here is a decent person who believes in God and is just like you. And, you know, not that we don't have, I realize we have atheist listeners. I realize we have people who think that that's praying to a sky god. And I respect you for feeling that way. But in terms of communicating a message to average Americans, her voice and her message connected with people that it might not have connected with.
Yeah.
Because she was you know, calling out to a religious value as well as to justice.
Calling out to God.
Yep.
And, you know, in the same way, you might hate your mom or not know your mom.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the battlefield, a man crying for his mother
mm-hmm.
doesn't lose its power just because you personally don't have a good relationship with your mom.
Right. Right.
People, you know, humans relate to that on a human level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it also said that she understood that the courts were not going to protect her.
Yeah.
And the police were not going to protect her.
Yep.
And the news media wasn't going to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
And that the
mm-hmm.
And that even as he died, somewhere out there on some right-wing website, someone was looking for his mugshot.
Yep.
Or some picture of him that they could thug up and turn it into, well, he had it coming.
Yeah.
Because that is the natural reflex of conservatives and the natural reflex of the criminal justice system.
And of the mainstream media as
protect
well.
Protect itself and protect this illusion
yep.
that you can, there always is a reason beyond idiocy, gun happiness, and racism. There mm-hmm. has to be some other reason. And that's,
right.
that's what's so challenging
mm-hmm.
about living right now. I'm going to not trivialize this because I am a middle-aged white guy. This is never going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I might get pulled over for a broken taillight because pulling people over for bullshit charges is how small towns raise money.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly could happen to me. But I am never going to be faced with a situation where I am pulled over for a bullshit charge, I reach for my wallet, and I'm shot by a cop who thinks he can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
That is not in my experience. I can sympathize and empathize to a certain degree, but that's not the America I live in.
Right.
That's the America I live in. That's not my day-to-day reality.
Mm-hmm.
What is challenging is, again, I don't want to trivialize this by jumping it into some larger moral lesson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there is an actual racist, xenophobic, anti-Semite, raving, conspiracy-mongering lunatic who is at the top of the ticket of the Republican Party. And because it is absolutely poison to say that out loud,
mm-hmm.
our institutions are looking for any other excuse
mm-hmm.
to explain why this horrible shit is going on.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be because the Republican Party is full of paranoid, racist gun thugs.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be because they built this monstrous machine. It can't be because something really dark and terrible has broken loose in our society and is now smashing things.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be because the cops are racist. It can't be because cops just shoot black people because they're black. Well, yeah, it can.
Yeah, it can.
That terrible thing is true.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such... I forget who I was tweeting to. Probably, I'm sure it was an NBC executive who never, ever, ever answers anything I say.
Mm-hmm.
But my response was, no, in Donald Trump's case, chaos is the plan.
Yeah.
Racism
yeah.
is the plan.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you have to have this pounded into your fucking skull before you get it? It is a message that the establishment does not want to receive because they do not want the blood on their hands.
Right.
They don't want to take ownership that, oh, we built this system.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this horrible thing going on inside of it, and that means us. And now we're going to have to talk about we want this shit to be behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And it never will be until it's actually behind us.
And when a blonde girl kills somebody at school... You know, it's her selfie. It's her cute little selfie. When a Texas white mother shoots her two daughters in the street,
mm-hmm.
it's a selfie. It's with makeup on.
And when
it's an African American male killed by my representative, by the person who is supposed, who my taxes
mm-hmm.
are paying. I mean, I mean that in a generic sense, but you know. Not only my taxes, but Alton Sterling's taxes and
yes.
Philando Castile's taxes
yep.
pay for this guy to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, the media goes and finds the mugshot.
Right.
Because that's how it has to be.
When there's a mass shooting, the NRA gets up on its hind legs and all the talking points come out and everyone is frozen in place. Mm-hmm. When two black men are shot so close together that I thought they were talking about the same person
mm-hmm.
when I woke up to that this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Really two different black men were murdered by cops in America so close together that I thought they were the that was the same story until I listened more carefully. When those things happen,
silence.
When Clive and Bundy and his inbred band of government moochers steal from the taxpayer, poach our on our land, steal from us all, run his cattle across
and have land. Something to tell us about the Negro, Driftglass, at the same time.
But before we get to that point, he has been served over and over again. He has been told to stop over and over again. He is clearly breaking the law. And his response, the response from the inbred hicks who support him, is to come out with their AR-15s, come out brandishing weapons. Some asshole on an overpass, there's a photograph you can look up, who's a sniper. Who's pointing his sniper rifle at federal law enforcement.
Right.
And the response from federal law enforcement is not to napalm these fuckers. Mm-hmm. It's to negotiate and back and de-escalate. And that's great. If that's the response, if that is the standard operating procedure for law enforcement, that's terrific. The standard operating procedure when dealing with Clive and Bundy is to negotiate and de-escalate, even though he's actually pointing weapons at you. The standard operating procedure for a black man who is unarmed, who is no threat, who just frightens you, is to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And
in front of his kid.
In front of his kid. Well, in front of his girlfriend, in front of his kid.
Yep.
You know, and here's the thing. The difference between the good guys and the bad guys is now so stark in our culture that it's taking all of the media's energy to pretend that it's not real.
Well, and let's dovetail that, because I was trying to find a way to switch topics in a respectful way, which is hard to do.
It is.
But, you know, there is an actual white supremacist group co-sponsoring a rally for Trump at the Republican National Convention, opening day of the convention. The name of this, it's with Alex Jones and Roger Stone. And this is their, you know, ball gag wearing rally for, you know, pro-America.
Uh-huh.
And it's Eternal Sentry, S-E-N-T-R-Y.
Not Eternal Sentient, because they're not.
No, because they're not. but this is the mainstreaming of InfoWars. This is the mainstreaming of real right-wing, racist, conspiracy theorist nut jobs.
Right.
Who are now the Republican Party.
Yes, they are.
And they've taken over, and whether that's permanent or temporary, I think they're here to stay.
Yeah, they are.
And it's a tragedy for the country that's going on. It's a tragedy for the Republican Party, and it's a tragedy for the two-party system, because we're not going to have a two-party system. We're going to have, the Eisenhower Republicans of Hillary Clinton and the FBI Director Comey, you know, who are basically in the sane party. This is it's becoming a Monty Python skit.
And
it's the silly party versus the unsilly party.
And the FDR liberals like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
All sort of in the same big tent.
Yeah. Having to be in the same big tent because the other side is insane.
Yeah.
And racist and dangerous.
So we have to modify the old quote about all that's required for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing. We have to change that to all that's required for evil to succeed is for evil to be good ratings on CNN.
Right.
Because
then we'll have.
I don't know if you've noticed this, Blue Gal.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing that has paralleled Donald Trump's rise.
Mm-hmm.
Has been the Wingnut Full Employment Project on cable news.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is a striking Iraq War parallel, where the rise of an actual fascist at the head of the Republican Party has not led to a massive increase in the employment of the people who warned you this was fucking coming for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
No. Instead, we have a large number of increase in people who were Ted Cruz Republicans arguing with people who were Donald Trump Republicans on camera.
Yep.
Because
so that we have both sides, right?
Well, because it is, I mean, let's face it, Jeff Zucker would hire Goebbels if he thought it would increase ratings.
Yep.
He is an absolute soulless monster who will put evil on television. We hired Corey Lewandowski.
Corey Lewandowski, yeah.
And he hired a bunch of other people too. And it really is. And you listen to the people who work in that industry talk, and it's, well, it's because ratings.
Yeah.
We have to get ratings. Well, why not put on Holocaust deniers? Really?
Yep.
Why
yep.
not? They're great. They're great ratings because they're nuts. And they say crazy shit and you look down your nose at them. But the net effect of the soulless corporate villains who own our media has been the mainstreaming of genuinely evil, monstrous people, mm-hmm. because they are coming in on the coattails of a genuinely evil, monstrous man who is heading a party that has been taken over by goblins and lunatics.
Yep. And even the Never Trump Republicans
are worse.
We're just waiting for their chance to be proven right about Trump so that they can come back in January and say, well, you know, see, he wasn't a real conservative.
And so who's leading the
Democrats? Right.
This morning, just as an example, who do we have on Morning Joe?
Oh, my God.
We have Harold Fraud Jr. Mm-hmm. and Michael Steele and Mark Halperin and Bill Kristol. You know, the leader of the intellectual opponents to Donald Trump is Bill fucking Kristol, who has apparently a backstage pass at any station he wants to go to on any time. And it is no longer a question of, why are you putting Bill Kristol on television when he's a liar and a blood-drunk monster and has been wrong about everything? Well, he's the leader of the anti-Trump movement. No, you know who the leader of the anti-Trump movement is? The Democratic Party.
Right. Hillary Clinton is the leader of the anti-Trump movement.
And you know who
right
the leader
now.
Of the anti-Trump yeah. movement has been for the last 30 years? Liberals.
Liberals
yep. are the ones who've been telling you, you are building a monster and it will destroy us all. How about putting some of those people? No, we can't really do that because it scares the no-neck imbeciles that we're trying to attract away. So instead of actually having liberals, we're going to put on Harold Ford Jr., who will say, you know, my close personal friend Michael Steele and I, who's talking to Lincoln Chaffetz, for God's sakes? And, you know, he was a place kicker at my school. And, you know, me and Lincoln go way back. Because Harold Ford Jr. is friends with
Lincoln Chaffee or Chaffetz?
I'm sorry, Jason Chaffetz.
Jason Chaffetz, yeah.
Because Harold Ford Jr. is close personal friends with every scumbag in mm-hmm. D.C., mm-hmm. every douchebag in D.C. And when you need a token liberal, and I mean that real deliberately, when you need a token black liberal on television, you roll out Harold Ford Jr., mm-hmm. former Republican congressman Harold Ford Jr., who has sold out every fucking liberal principle extant. Mm-hmm. You don't haul out somebody who will say, why the hell is Bill Kristol on this set?
Yeah.
You never let that person. And in the middle of these two geniuses, you put Michael Steele. And that's...
And he's going to talk process, if anything.
Yes.
If he's going to push back on Trump or anybody, it's going to be about process, not about issues.
Right. It's strategically, what Donald Trump has to do to reposition mm-hmm. himself.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, Michael. Again, I'm sure you sleep at night on a big bed made of money.
Mm-hmm.
But really, really, the whole system is gone.
Hurting our country.
And
making children go hungry.
Yeah.
And that's what it's doing. We're not talking about austerity, which, by the way, just getting back to, you know, stuff like broken taillight, right?
Yeah.
You know, Philando Castile working at a Montessori school in the cafeteria. Alton Sterling selling CDs in front of a convenience store to feed his family. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're not talking about poverty and heads of household and, you know, decent men who are trying. We're not talking about that.
No, we're talking about the Star of David.
No, well, and we should talk about that too.
Yeah.
But this story has levels that are not being discussed. And so much of it always, always, always goes back to austerity, 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 which comes from mm-hmm. Washington, D.C., where everyone has a job and everyone has a salary. And if you switch sides and go work for, you know, we have purple strategies, so we can work for the red or the blue, right? Mm-hmm. We can do, you know, and make $100,000 a month running a campaign for, you know, for whatever. We're, you know, we can go work for Putin. We can work for Trump. We can work for anybody we want. And we're friends with everybody, as you say, because the village just keeps supporting each other. That's what we're all about.
And the minute you're done making Donald Trump into a national figure, you get to walk across the street and get hired by Jeff Zucker at CNN.
Yep.
You are never going to go hungry. And the other side of that equation is exactly right. It is everyone else who's not in that little circle. And so we're not going to talk about what's going on when it comes to education and poverty and class and race. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about whether or not Donald Trump is positioning himself correctly and what happened today and who won the cycle and who won the news. And, you know, in this case, I think we have to I think we reached this point a long time ago, but we really do have to sort of publicly acknowledge that there is no point at which the people who are television conscience and start behaving like grown-ups and adults in a democracy. You can't trust anyone on television. You can't. You can trust some people a certain degree and some people to a certain level. But just when I hope that just when someone has earned my trust, hey, look, here's Ben Dominic being trolled out in front of me. They're clearly they wear a leash. And so it is absolutely the case that Donald Trump, his campaign rolled out anti-Semitic imagery that they pulled off of a white supremacist website somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to just back up for just a minute and finish the conversation about Morning Joe. Because this morning, well, let me back up even further. Yesterday, Donald Trump yesterday, I can tell you, and I don't think I'm talking out of school saying this, my Crooks and Liars colleagues and I were emailing each other back and forth. All of us are on the same mail list. And consciously and with concern and with being as serious as a heart attack, being as serious as we could be, saying to each other, what is wrong with Donald Trump? Is he, we know he doesn't drink. Is he on some sort of prescription medication that's making him rant like this? Is he taking cocaine or some kind of stimulant that's just having him ramble at a, in a very high rate of speed and all over the map? Someone asked in a and not in a, you know, let's wish harm on the guy kind of way. No. This was not, we were not being snarky. That's what I want to say. This was not a snarky conversation. This was, this is, this, there's something wrong here. And, you know, is he about to have a heart attack? Sometimes people that are about to have some sort of cardiac episode, and I mean this, God forbid, we don't wish any physical harm to anyone, just mentally observing this guy, something's going on. And turning on Morning Joe this morning, and their prescription, their diagnosis of Donald Trump is he's got his groove back.
Got his groove back.
And, you know, as I said at Crooks and Liars today, I said, look, I don't know what drug Donald Trump's on, but the people at Morning Joe are definitely smoking something.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Well, it's a steady paycheck.
It's a steady paycheck and money, right. And you would have thought, listening to them review Donald Trump's performance the day before, that he just delivered his own I Have a Dream speech.
Yes, you
know, it was, he's got his groove back. Even Bill Kristol was saying afterwards how awesome, it was amazing. And then this sentence from Mika Brzezinski.
Yes.
You saw him connecting with the crowd in a way that no other politician in the history of politics that we know ever could.
That
is a direct quote.
So greater than the Nuremberg rally.
Right.
Was Donald Trump's connection
greater than
to
JFK's first inaugural, or his inaugural?
Yeah.
Greater than
Winston,
you know,
Churchill summoning
even Reagan after the Challenger disaster.
Right.
You could even put, I mean, you don't have to go way far back, and you don't have to pick a Democrat, and you don't have to pick a Nazi, and you don't have to pick, you know, some humongously important world event. There are speeches that, you know, you saw him connecting with the crowd in a way that no other politician in the history of politics that we know ever could.
Uh-huh.
That's what she said. I mean, and I said, that is her, believe me, as far as I'm concerned, that is her great news for John McCain moment.
Yeah.
She will never live that down in my book.
Well, she doesn't have to.
Writing.
I mean, she's Joe Scarborough's.
She doesn't know who I am. That's fine.
She's Joe Scarborough's footstool, and she's really good at that job.
Girlfriend. So,
She does for Joe Scarborough symbolically, but what Roger Ailes wants Gretchen Carlson to do literally. And that's her job. Her job is to be a meek little punching bag for the big Irish loudmouth right-wing asshole, and occasionally pipe up and say, does anybody want pancake? And really...
And what's going to happen to Morning Joe in January? They're still going to be on the air.
Sure.
Sure.
Everybody there is still going to be there and still have a job. And they're going to point out that this, and I went to Twitter. There are hundreds of people on Twitter predicting that Hillary Clinton's going to get 400 electoral votes. Okay. Yeah. That's how bad it is.
I don't think so.
But in the meantime, I don't either, but we can hope. I mean, for the sake of the country, we can hope that it is such a blowout. We should really be working for that.
Yeah.
Because that says something about America that we want to say.
But as long as these people control the cameras,
that's what they're doing. And I said to you that I wanted to do a Photoshop of Chuck Todd and Joe Scarborough carrying Donald Trump across up to the finish line, so that it would be a horse race, so that it would be close, so that it would be worth watching. Because that's all that matters. It has to be worth watching.
Well,
in January, just to finish the thought, in January, Morning Joe's roundtable points out, well, you know, Donald Trump wasn't a real conservative and he was an outlier. So this does not mean that Hillary Clinton has any kind of a mandate. And, look, we've got people from No Labels here.
Right, Bill Kristol? Yes, that's right. Mark McKinnon, absolutely right. That's so true. You know, I was saying just months ago that Donald Trump is an outlier and not really a Republican.
And this doesn't mean that Hillary Clinton has a mandate.
Right.
This is the two-party system is strong as ever, and there's going to be a vigorous defense of conservative values in the House. I promise you that. Yeah. Okay.
And you can.
Thank you, Jason Chaffetz.
And that is what is exhausting about this.
Exactly. It's how predictable it is.
It is so clearly predictable that as long as Jeff Zucker controls the cameras, as long as Bill, what's his name, Graham, I want to say, but that ain't right. Controls the cameras, they will get away with murder every fucking time. You can watch them rewriting history to suit themselves in real time.
In real time, every day.
And we can sit on the sidelines and point it out and jump up and down and wave our arms and et cetera. But as long as Chuck Todd does not feel professionally terrified to lie on behalf of the evil men that he serves, nothing is going to change in the media. And one example of that, as I wrote yesterday or today, they only have one font that they write with, and that's Horse Race Sans Serif. They cannot tell any story that is not evenly divided between two equally evil halves, between the both sides. And when one lie collapses, the people who were just to one side of it or just to the other come scuttling out of the woodwork. Mark McKinnon and No Labels and Tom Friedman and David Brooks and all the rest of the scum will come scurrying right back on the camera and say, see, we told you so. We told you so. You know what you need is a grand bargain. What Hillary should do is start thinking about a grand bargain right now.
Well, and this is the other thing that just makes me so angry is that the House of Representatives and all of the media and everyone had time for a show trial today of the FBI.
Oh, sure. There's always
time for that.
Time for that. Always time
for
that.
But there is no time to fund Zika defense.
No, there's no time to do your job.
There are 320 women with Zika that the CDC is tracking their pregnancies.
Right now.
320 right now today. And Mitch McConnell is not going to allow a vote on Zika.
No, because and this is where having a memory is the most amusing and dangerous part of being a liberal, because they're just rerunning the 90s except on steroids.
It's
Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump, shutting the government down, and witch hunts. Over every time they're in the White House, suddenly we have witch hunts and government shutdowns and dysfunction. And this is where, again, to just to thread this through, this is where the deliberate lying about American history, really recent American history, shit you can look up with three mouse clicks, has become part of the media message. This weekend on Meet the Press, Chuck Todd essentially turned the microphone over to a guy named John Rausch. John Rausch from The Atlantic, who has a thesis that this whole transparency thing has gone way too far and that Boss Tweed and Tammany Hall were actually good for democracy. And it is, and Chuck Todd lauded this guy with praise at the beginning, at the very end said, you know, lawmakers need to read your article, man. This is seminal. This is important. Voters should read this. And his thesis was, surprise, surprise, I'm going to read you one quote from there. The Republicans' noisy breakdown has been echoed eerily, albeit less loudly, on the Democratic side.
Both sides.
And then we get down to, and this is because, you know, Bernie Sanders existed and ran a really good campaign and challenged Hillary Clinton. But, you know, the breakdown is happening all over, man. It's the whole, it's all institutions everywhere, except ours, of course. Ours are just fine. But you dig down one inch below the surface, and his next thesis is that the political disintegration plagues Congress, too. You see, Congress is just crazy and dysfunctional and gridlocked, and nobody knows why, but really probably both sides and gridlock and blah, blah, blah. Now, three mouse clicks away from this flat-out lie is a lovely article in Alternet reminding Americans that Nancy Pelosi was the most effective speaker in the House's history.
Yep.
When Democrats were in charge of the House of Representatives, they got a shitload of things done. You might not like some of the things they did. You might love some of the things they did. But the House behaved like a legislative body, and they passed a whole lot of stuff in a hurry.
And it wasn't just naming post offices either. Yeah.
It was health care.
Yeah.
It was Lilly Ledbetter. And 20 other things in between during a very tiny window. And now whenever immigration comes up or gun control comes up or anything else comes up, the critique from the right has been, well, why didn't Democrats do that when they had control in the House? Well, they had control of the House for like 70 days total, or Congress for 70 days total. They were relieved of the pressure brought to bear by the fascist American Party, which is dedicated to witch hunts and government shutdown and crashing the economy and slandering the president and blocking his legislative agenda for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it's not dysfunction. When Democrats were in control of things, shit got done. Republicans are in control of things. Republicans got their agenda, which is witch hunts, slander, shutdown, show trials. That's that is their agenda. And every time from Newt Gingrich on to the current Congress, every time they get control of power, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So this fantasy that it's political disintegration at the presidential level is a lie. This fantasy that it's happening in Congress, no, it's because the party that hates government and wants to destroy it currently has control of the House and the Senate. That's why shit is blowing up. Not because government is a failure, but because the Republican Party is trying to destroy this country. And yet, Chuck Todd could not be troubled to put one person on Meet the Press to ask one question about what was clearly an article fraught with outright lies in support of the Beltway's both-siders thesis.
Yeah.
It fell to, you know, discredited outsider, unshaven bum bloggers like me to ask the obvious question, well, it isn't Congress. Here's proof that it's not. Why are you lying about this? Well, the answer is, if I don't tell the both-siders lie, Chuck Todd won't butter my ass and put me in front of a camera on Meet the Press. That's the only story that sells. And and the thing that made this so frustrating was it was such a stupid lie.
Yeah.
Such a silly lie. Such a lie that requires no effort whatsoever to debunk. And yet, there it is, just laid out on the table, and Chuck Todd rubbing his hands together saying, this is such an important thing. Everyone should read this article.
Because it affirms what he needs to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, there's no one in the media who's on our side. You know, the person who should be pointing a camera at Chuck Todd and asking him this pretty obvious question, there's only two people left anywhere, and they both work in the same building as Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
And neither of them is ever going to do that.
Yeah.
So we don't have any friends in the media anymore. Quit, you know, it's a puppet show. It's a show that is cast as a play would be. And there's a couple of wonderful articles out there that say, no, when they're doing a show, you get the liberal and the conservative and the centrist and the process guy. And they cast this stuff like a play.
And they cast it to have people speak in 20-second sound bites. And that's the standard by which you are selected.
To achieve a
Stay in your lane, speak in this sound bite, don't go any faster than the speed, and you can be on our show.
And keep the eyeballs here. All of the people who are watching, all the no-necks, all the, you know, politically illiterate, all the people who are taking a break from jerking off to Fox News who wander over here, give them something to watch. Give them a Corey Lewandowski. Give them a Rick Wilson. Give them, you know, give them a Ben Dominic. Validate their point of view, too, and they'll stay here, and we can sell more penis cream and headache remedy.
Right. Right. We don't want to spend too much time on Hillary's emails,
no.
Except to say that what every person in the law that I have spoken to about this mm-hmm. and that I've heard speak about this, every former prosecutor, including Bill Weld, who is the vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party, and who I learned this week, he said on the air that he was the head of the criminal division for the Department of Justice in Washington. But I did not realize that he was a Reagan appointee to that position.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no criminal intent, there will not be a charge.
Right.
I had a back and forth with a person on Twitter who really wanted there to be a liberal who really wanted there to be a charge. That's all I'm going to say.
I had a similar back and forth. And
yeah.
Okay.
And having to explain that prosecutors do not bring cases to a judge that they're going to lose. And that is doubly true if the prosecutor is elected mm-hmm. or is answerable to Congress. That's
yeah.
just, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this person that I was tweeting back and forth with said, well, that means nobody ever gets prosecuted. And I said, no, they don't. Usually it's a plea bargain.
Right.
And usually it's a settlement. And usually it doesn't go to court. And when it goes to court, it's a big deal. And it's because both the prosecutor thinks there's a case that he can win, and the defendant is able to lawyer up.
Right.
And the lawyer on the other side thinks he can win. And when it's that close, when it's 51-49, that's when they go to trial. Otherwise, no, they try to get a settlement. They try to get a plea bargain. They try to make sure it doesn't go before a judge or a jury. And, that means that, you know, if there was weed in Hillary's purse next to her hot sauce, she wouldn't get arrested. But if she was black, she would. And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Where have you been living? Of course.
Welcome to the United States of America. I don't mean to be that cynical.
No, but it's
but
true.
The FBI director looked at it, and to her credit, I think I've said this before on the podcast, Hillary Clinton cooperated every step of the way with the FBI. She did not release documents that the FBI was investigating. She met with the FBI every single time they asked and answered every single question honestly to them. And maybe we can get into Bill Clinton on the tarmac in a minute. But she's a lawyer. All her friends are lawyers.
Yeah.
All her colleagues are lawyers. And she knows what the prosecutor is looking for. What the prosecutor is looking for, and this is how the FBI gets you, right? You may or may not have committed a crime. The FBI knocks on your door. You're stupid enough to let them in without a warrant.
Yeah.
You lie to them once and they've got you.
Yeah.
On perjury.
Yeah.
So, of course, she knows this. And she's going to tell them exactly what is verifiable. And she stayed right in line and did not give him any reason mm-hmm. to accuse her of messing with his investigation. Guccifer, on the other hand,
yeah.
You know, no one can believe that a basement dwelling East European anarchist hacker lied, right?
No, I hacked her email. It was full of stuff.
So easy.
And the FBI pushes in for, oh, I didn't. I lied. It was just making it up, man.
FBI walks in and he's in jail. Yeah. Oh, no, I lied. I lied about that. Yeah. Because he's not going to lie to the FBI. His appointed attorneys told him.
Yeah.
You will go to jail forever if you tell one lie to this person. That's it. Everything has to be absolutely honest. So, I want to tell you something. This may or may not make it into the podcast. Someone at Crooks and Liars in the comment thread said, yeah, but there's a Guccifer 2.0 that does have documents from her email.
Sure.
Well, I went to Guccifer 2's Twitter stream, and it is the legitimate hacker's Twitter stream and his WordPress blog, which claims to have Hillary Clinton and DNC documents. They may be real or they may not be real. I find them highly suspect, but maybe that's my bias talking. But here's what I find really scary is if you click on a link on Guccifer 2's blog, it downloads a file to your computer.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. And
so,
and here's where you lost me. Someone in the comments section at this blog said.
Yeah, I know. At Crooks and Liars.
Yeah.
It is at Crooks and Liars.
Yeah.
And that's my blog, and it was my post, and I
absolutely
pay attention to the commenters when I write. So
absolutely.
That's important.
As well,
I
you
understand
should.
That.
I totally do.
You pay attention to your own comments.
I do.
So, you know.
I do. And I did have a back and forth with someone who was desperate for Hillary to be guilty.
Yeah.
And every, you know, every, because if Hillary's not guilty, then the whole system's corrupt, man. Well, okay, I'm willing to accept the fact that the system is corrupt, but you simply cannot make the false equivalence argument from the left in good faith without positing a conspiracy so vast and so all-encompassing and so all-inclusive that basically only you and I don't know about it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I'm sorry, when Newt Gingrich and the Republican Congress were in charge of things, it was show trial, slander, fake charges, and there was never going to be any end of hearings because that's right. How you destroy a Democratic president. When George Bush was president, the same people who made such a deeply principled argument about having to hold president
the rule of law,
the
yes,
highest possible,
right.
Even the appearance of impropriety, suddenly didn't give a shit about the appearance of impropriety. There were no hearings about warrantless wiretapping that amounted to anything. There were no hearings about the millions and millions of emails that Karl Rove made go away. There were no hearings about the fact that Dick Cheney met with oil executives to cut up the Middle East before the Iraq War was proposed. There were,
or that he made $23 million in profit on his tax return, which had to be made public.
There were no hearings.
Yeah, in 1 year as a sitting vice president.
There were no hearings about the fact that the President of the United States lied us into the wrong war, or virtually none. There were no hearings about the 11 or 12 Benghazis that happened under George Bush's watch.
There were hearings. There was one hearing to come up with recommendations
exactly.
about security of embassies and security of our troops overseas, and they made recommendations to the Pentagon, and then they were done.
And,
yeah.
And nobody.
Driftglass, not to interrupt you too much, but just to say, there was rule of law, and we are going to trust, and we are going to verify with James Comey up until this week.
Right. They loved him up until this week.
They loved him up until he didn't give them the result they wanted, and now they're going to have a show trial.
And now he's part of the
conspiracy,
that's
how they react.
He's
yeah. Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Because it is impossible for the tiny brains on the Republican Party and the obsessive people on the left who cannot function in a universe full of imperfection and nuance to say, you know what? There really is a difference between the two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Gingrich years, here's how Congress operated when Republicans were running things and a Democrat was in the White House. Put George Bush in the White House, suddenly you don't give a shit about activist judges because activist judges made him president. You don't give a shit about federalism or states' rights because sticking their nose into the business of the states is what made George Bush president. You don't give a damn about deficits, which is all you cared about when Bill Clinton was president. You don't give a damn about the appearance of impropriety. You don't give a damn about holding the executive accountable. You don't give a damn about secret shit going on outside the rule of law or flatly illegal stuff. You don't give a shit. As a Republican, you didn't give a shit about any of this until the black guy put his hand on the Bible. Then suddenly, it was the 90s all over again because the Bush administration never happened. You put on your funny hat, you pretended you were an independent, conservative, constitutional, whatever, and suddenly you care about deficits. Suddenly the rule of law. Suddenly it's time for show trials. Suddenly it's time to shut the government down if you don't get every fucking thing you want. And what you want is awful. And the problem is there is no one to hold up these two pictures to the light and going, what's wrong with this picture? Oh, one of these two parties needs to be wiped off the face of the fucking earth and rebuilt from scratch because they are evil and debased and deranged
and racist.
Period. Yeah. And there's no one in the media who will point to this obvious truth because it's so much better for ratings to pretend that having on the one hand, Corey Lewandowski on this microphone and Tits McGee, who's also a Trump surrogate on this microphone.
Yeah.
And having Eugene Robinson going, well, you know, on the other hand, that's what's passing for that will effectively cover up the fact that the Republican Party is a rotting shithole that needs to be fixed.
And Driftglass, there are There are, I think I've said before, there's a way of looking at the world where there are only two emotions, love and fear, and every other emotion stems from those two emotions.
Every real estate agent knows this.
And I think of that when I think about how you react to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
That, you know, the belief structure on the right that we love to go after Hillary Clinton because it makes us money and fame and power and we get places on TV news, right? But the left individuals who see the world in a very black and white way, and everyone in the establishment is corrupt and the whole system is corrupt.
Equally.
And you cannot equally corrupt and you cannot have gray areas because, you know, I have to stand outside of the system and judge it. And when you do that, you are, and I mean this very literally because Twitter did this, putting your trust in a Guccifer.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, and you find out basement-dwelling East European anarchist hacker lied to you and to everybody, and especially to Fox News.
You are one step away from saying, you know, Alec Jones really has a point.
You are, well, yeah, exactly. You know, it's everything's a big conspiracy, and everyone's out to get me, and therefore I don't have, I can stand here and be afraid of real power.
Mm-hmm.
And and I do think a lot of the Hillary hate is the fact that she and her husband and the Clintons and the whole Clinton machine is just really comfortable having lots and lots of power.
Yes, they are. Way too comfortable for my taste.
Concentrating it in their hands and using it for what they perceive to be good, and oftentimes it is. I have no argument, by the way, with her taking money from the goddamn Saudis and using it to buy AIDS drugs for poor people in Africa who need it.
Right.
9 million AIDS patients in Africa were helped, and that is verified because she took money from people who might have been bad people. They might not let women drive or vote. We might have all kinds of issues with them, and I get that. But I'm not going to argue to those 9 million AIDS patients that you should have held back
right.
because of this moral stand that we have to make
right.
against Saudi fucking Arabia. Because you know what? The Bush family has lots of friends in the Saudi government.
Yeah.
And they're not going away. So that was a side item. We have to get to Roger Ailes.
We do.
I'm sorry.
We do. And
that's that. I'm giving all of our listeners whiplash, and I'm getting whiplash too.
Mm-hmm.
Don't settle, Gretchen. We want to have full discovery. We want everyone at Fox News to be put under deposition and made to testify.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, tell people. People 20 years from now are not going to know who Gretchen was, so why don't you tell them?
Yeah, Gretchen Carlson is suing her former boss, Roger Ailes, for sexual harassment.
Gretchen Carlson, who's been a loyal Fox stooge
for
a long,
12 years,
long,
15
long,
years?
Yeah, long time.
Yeah.
Long time.
Yeah. And, you know, there have been a debate in the comment threads, again, about can workers in a whorehouse expect protection from their bosses? And my answer to that is yes.
Yes, they can.
That
yes.
You cannot, even in a whorehouse, be asked to provide sexual favors to your boss in exchange for employment.
Well, let's focus in on that for a second.
Yeah.
Because
I am saying Fox News is a whorehouse. Spare me your letters on that. Fox News is a whorehouse.
A well-run house, body house.
Yeah.
Is a business.
It's a business.
In an ideal world where people have control of their own bodies and control of their own sexuality, can choose to rent it or sell it or marry or whatever they want to do without fear of coercion, it's a business. And value for value received. And I have nothing against women who are forced into prostitution. It's a form of slavery, whether it's economic or physical or what have you. Children,
however that coercion manifests itself. Yeah.
Itself.
Yep.
Unacceptable. Yep. But I would liken it more to an abattoir.
Okay.
Gretchen Carlson has been working in the building where the truth goes to die.
Right.
A slaughterhouse of reality that generates lies and bullshit and lies and bullshit. She has been a happy worker at the scummiest place in America. And then she she's worked in this slaughterhouse for 15 years. And she stepped in a cow pie. And is now horrified that this is going on around her. You work in a fundamentally despicable and loathsome place, Gretchen. You work for a truly despicable and evil man, Gretchen. You have to be completely stupid or in absolute denial to have pretended all of these years that Roger Ailes is not just an awful, loathsome human slug, Gretchen.
Well, and let's face it, she signed up to be an actress in a role
right.
herself.
Absolutely.
And she signed up with Roger Ailes to play a role. She is a graduate of Stanford University
yes.
in California. And she sits on the couch at Fox and Friends for years, pretending that she has to go to her iPad and look up the word czar to find out what czar means.
Because she doesn't have a brain in her head.
Right.
Because that's what the audience
wants to
see.
In her miniskirt, with her low-cut red miniskirt, you know, keeping her weight at within a certain range because that's in her contract.
Well, that's...
And, you know, all of that... Now, all of that is a legitimate thing for a woman to decide to do for herself, to make money for her family, mm-hmm. to invest in her retirement, to have the kind of lifestyle she wants to have.
Right.
And that does not mean that her boss is allowed to expect sexual favors in exchange for employment.
Absolutely,
that is
true.
Illegal.
Absolutely true. And the other side of that is, you worked for an awful, evil person who does mm-hmm. awful, evil things on purpose for money for years. And and if you want to settle this like any other legal dispute, that's fine. But please stuff your outrage up your ass.
Right.
Because you worked
right.
for awful people on purpose for money. And you goddamn
and
well knew.
Cash to paycheck every month.
And
absolutely.
You goddamn well knew Roger Ailes was a scumbag. Mm-hmm. You chipped the king's coin. You worked for a loathsome human being. And then that awfulness turned on you. And now you're outraged. Well, good.
Right.
Sue him. Settle. Do whatever you're going to do. But shut the fuck up with your outrage.
Yep.
Because
yep.
you worked for a monster. And then the monster grabbed your ass. Sorry,
yep.
golly.
And you are entitled to sue over
sure
that.
Sure you are.
You
Absolutely.
Are entitled to sue over that.
You have your day in court. But
right.
where was your outrage when Roger Ailes was fucking the country?
Right,
hmm?
Right.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. He was paying you to go along with it, so that was okay.
Yeah.
So, and you know what?
And to make the role of woman on the show that you co-hosted.
Yeah. Into Bimbo.
Be an idiot.
Yeah. He casts women as Tits McGee, as bimbos,
yep.
on his show on purpose. And read the book. That's why.
And you played that role.
That's why
yeah.
he has the glass
willingly.
Tabletops. That's why he has the...
Right.
It's not an accident that Roger Ailes worked on the Mike Douglas show, his first job.
Yeah. And that 50 women on his show are blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one isn't. So, okay. Hey, we have to congratulate you, Driftglass. You got an acknowledgement this week.
Yeah.
In the annals of blogging, writing history.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a big award. It was a small ceremony, but I meant a lot.
Money.
No.
But Driftglass was acknowledged in an article at the Huffington Post as far as they can tell, the originator of the phrase dumpster fire in a political context.
Was me.
That was you.
Yes.
Back in 2006?
2005 or 6. It was an early post.
5 or 6. Yeah. And you were talking about...
David Brooks.
No, I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure I was.
Really?
Yep.
I thought it was about the gambling stuff going on.
It was. But it was the, you didn't notice the, you know, giant moral dumpster fire your party
okay.
had become. Until now.
Okay.
Isn't that weird how you didn't notice it until suddenly, you know, it started raining
yeah.
shit on you personally?
Yeah, but it was about the moral majority funding anti-gambling
yeah.
stuff.
It was about
in
Jack
Alabama.
Abramoff and Ralph
yeah,
Reed.
And Jack Abramoff and Ralph
and,
Reed.
And,
right,
you know,
right. And they are the moral dumpster fire that David Brooks did not acknowledge. Yeah,
and David Brooks was sure that if we just get rid of Abramoff, and Abramoff-ism, because David Brooks loves putting isms after people's names as if the problem wasn't Republican-ism. Then once we got rid of that, then we'll go back to being a normal party. The number of times
that's going to be Trump. Oh, I mean, you'd think this isn't going to happen again 10 years later.
Oh,
it's going to be Trump all over. Trumpism is dead. Long live the Republican Party.
Let me remind you that in November of 2014, David Brooks said after the Republicans, you know, won the election, won the midterms, he and what's her name, the New York Times,
Gail Collins,
in the last quote-unquote conversation they ever had. Talks about how finally the Republican Party was cleaning up their brand and purifying their party, and the horrible days of Sarah Palin are over, and the good times, the Tom Cotton good times, are just around the corner.
Tom Cotton good times.
Yeah, finally got rid of that crazy Palin lady. And really.
And now we've got Tom Cotton.
Now we got Tom Cotton.
Right.
And now we have Donald Trump. And it really is a giant, flaming, eternally burning moral dumpster fire on the right. And yeah. And people like David Brooks and, you know, dozens of others like him who are paid phenomenal amounts of money to lie to you every day, keep pretending that it's one guy. It's this one guy or these three guys that are messing it up for the rest of us. No, see, here's the thing. David, you're the fringe. They're the party.
Yeah.
They hired you, very much like they hired Gretchen Carlson, to put up a front, to lend them the air of respectability. And now the fumes from that dumpster fire are overwhelming your ability to throw perfume at it and pretend it's not burning. Anyway, it was me. It was not the first time I've coined something. It probably won't be the last.
Yeah, you coined Google Whack, right?
No. Google I have whack? Many Google Whacks.
Oh, you have Google Whacks, but someone else coined that?
Yeah, Google Whack was a turn of a phrase where there's only one on Google.
Okay, so there's only one thing that comes up when you Google that term.
Turn of a phrase, and I had a few of those in my time. No one has yet stolen from me the tossing cinder blocks from the overpass into traffic metaphor, how Republicans conduct politics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've written a lot of stuff.
You have. And I'm glad you're back to writing because you took a little break this weekend. I know you were busy with other things, but yeah.
Well, I was tired. Yeah. I was tired of writing.
You were tired. Yeah, you were. And I understand why. So glad you're back. All right.
Yeah.
Each week we're supposed to our...
Sorry. Whatever.
Whatever. I love you. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Gonzo. Gonzo is one of these fashion model front of the kibble bag beauties who's just perfect. And his human says, yes, his name Gonzo was chosen before we met him. And he turned out to be so gorgeous and not fitting his name at all. We've always felt guilty about that. We should have named him Rock Hudson or Sean Connery, but he is Gonzo. Gonzo is not a cuddler, but he does have many toes, which makes him a blessed kitty to have the many toes. So go check out Gonzo and his many toes and his gorgeousness over at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Driftglass, we got an email from a member of a postal union.
Really?
Yes. The subject line, Go Postal Unions. This is a letter that we received from Jenny. Jenny is writing to us from Canada.
Hey,
and
Jenny.
And she is a member of the Canadian Postal Workers Union.
Yeah, Jenny.
And here's what she says. Greetings from Canada, Blue Gal and Driftglass. I am a faithful listener and contributor of $5 per month, which has been my pleasure. Thank you, Jenny. Sadly, I will have to suspend my contributions. I am a letter carrier in Canada and a proud member of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. My union has been trying to negotiate a contract with Canada Post to no avail, and as of July 10th, Canada Post has notified us that we will be locked out.
Oh, man.
We are preparing for a lengthy battle. Our leadership is asking us to be prepared to be without pay until the end of August. So you can imagine belts are being tightened around here rather dramatically. Mm-hmm. I am the lucky mom of two amazing teenage boys who I raise on my own, and they eat their weight in food daily.
So they're just like American boys.
Yeah, they are. I won't bore you with the details of the issues with Canada Post. I have attached our union president's press release so you can see what's going on. And it is exactly what you would expect. Mm-hmm. They have a douchebag leader of the Crown Canada Post who, believe it or not, his real name is Deepak Chopra. Not the same person, but his name is Deepak Chopra.
I have to get out.
And he wants to create a two-tier system for pensions.
Sure.
He wants to privatize pensions and make them not a guaranteed return
to the employee. No guaranteed benefits. You have a defined contribution.
No guaranteed benefits. You have, right, exactly.
Benefit, yeah.
It's exactly what you would expect. Exactly everything that you would expect. And, of course, the Canada Post, their union, is primarily women. Primarily, there's a large number of these Canada Post employees who work very hard at a rural level.
I bet they do.
To get the mail out.
Yeah.
And are not lawyered up to do anything to protect their pensions or themselves in any other way other than to go with the union and fight and take the summer with no money coming in. In order to fight this guy and to fight this this bullshit that's happening to them. So we are on your side, Jenny.
Absolutely.
And the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. Everybody listening to me, fists in the air.
Yeah, baby.
Canadian Union of Postal Workers, go Postal Union. All right. And we appreciate you so much, Jenny. She says, please enjoy your summer and keep putting out your funny and insightful podcast. It's one of my faves. I will continue to listen and start up my contributions when I get over this hump. Jenny, that breaks my heart. Thank you very much. You humble me tremendously, and we so appreciate you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now,
I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry when somebody says that to me, but oh my God.
No, well, labor's sticking together, sticking up for their rights, and, you know, everybody.
Yeah, I am fanning myself.
Everybody tighten their belts and everybody take a little bit, you know. Everybody takes a haircut and support the unions. That's how unions win.
Yep. And the fact that she realizes what that $5 a month means to us just makes me misty. Okay.
Now, a little bit of a show announcement next week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, one more thing.
Yeah.
Show announcement, important show announcement. Uh-huh. We now, at our website, have a link to Amazon Canada in addition to Amazon US. So if you are shopping Amazon in Canada, you can use a link at our website to shop Amazon Canada. And we went through the motions to do that. We won't get paid by direct deposit like we do in the US. They'll send us a check, and that's a C-H-E-Q-U-E.
Q-U-E, yes. Will it be Canadian money, Blue Gal?
I don't know. Once we reach the threshold where a CHEQUE is issued, we'll find out.
Just don't send pounds.
That might be several months from now.
No pounds. That's all we ask.
No euros, no pounds. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
Actually, we'll take anything. You shove it in an envelope.
We'll take anything. We'll take anything. We really will. And we appreciate you guys so much. You have another show note.
I do, which is next week.
Yeah.
1 week from today, this is Friday, you will find us roaming the halls, looking befuddled at Netroots Nation in St. Louis.
Yes, and if you are going to be at Netroots Nation, make sure you are following us at Pro Left Podcast, all one word. I will be updating that particular Twitter stream with our whereabouts and doings, so that if people want to find us and shake our hands and say hi, we would love to do that. We will be using that Twitter stream to let people know. And our plan is that on Saturday afternoon of the conference, we will be hanging out at least part and probably most of the afternoon with the Netroots radio people on Radio Row.
Yep.
They have invited us to be there. We're very excited to do that. And so they've been such a support to us over the years, and we love them. So we'll be hanging out with them and also with Arliss Bunny.
Yes.
Who is, you've been on their podcast before, so they will be there. And so, yeah, we're excited. We're going to get together face-to-face with our peeps. And if you are going to Netroots Nation in St. Louis, make sure you look us up and try to find us, and we would love to meet you.
We'll have no pens or keychains, although maybe you'll bring some spare yarn. I don't know. Oh, wait a minute. There's no such thing as spare yarn.
I don't go anywhere without my knitting. Are you kidding me?
There is no extra yarn. There is no spare yarn.
There is no extra yarn.
Semantically null terms that don't exist in the real world.
I haven't figured out what knitting I'm taking with me yet.
Well, get on that.
Oh, my God. I got to get right on that. That is what's important. You just throw underwear and toothbrush and toothpaste and clothes in a suitcase and don't think about it. And then you spend 3 hours figuring out what knitting you're going to take with you. Especially when I'm going to have 3 hours getting there and back in the car. So that's good knitting time for me. He drives, I knit. So
it's a very good partnership.
Thank you, dear. I love you for that, and I appreciate it so much.
At the end of it, we get where we're going, and someone has a new pair of socks.
So. Or a slipper or something. Yeah.
Or baby sweater. So it works well for us.
It does.
Occasionally, we throw on an audiobook and listen to, I don't know, Ayn Rand's greatest hits. Or I hear Mark Levine has a new book. Maybe we can.
Hey, Mark Levine has a new book. To read it.
I hear he's narrating in that soothing tone.
Can you imagine driving somewhere and listen? Yeah, you do that sometimes, though. You put on conservative AM radio.
I just skip past it to see what's going on there. I just go, okay.
Yeah, what are they covering so that you know? That's podcastable, by the way.
Exactly.
All right. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link, both U.S. and Canadian, at our website. We believe in buying local. And we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. The kids got Amazon gift certificates. It was middle child's birthday on July 2nd. She's 14. And since they're away with their dad, I just sent Amazon gift cards to them for birthday and unbirthday. And what they didn't realize is I get an email on the account every time they order something. The girls both ordered, get this, on their summer vacation, school supplies with their gift cards.
And you wiped a tear away from your eye.
Binders, mechanical pencils, pencil pouch, you know, but they all have their favorite Instagram star or YouTube star on them. So it's like a very individual purchase. I would not have picked that out for them. They knew what they wanted, but the idea that they had a actual gift card, they could get anything they wanted. Like, oh yeah, I need this Dan and Phil pencil pouch. Yeah.
Do you make Fault in Our Stars lunchboxes? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm sure someone
John
does.
Green is making a lot of money off of Youngest Child. Yeah. She's such a huge Fault in Our Stars fan. Mm-hmm. Everything is Fault in Our Stars. So it's a book, you know, it's a book that she's read.
Yeah.
So
she's a reader. They're all readers.
She's a reader. That's the thing. Okay. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, unless they've been locked out.
That's right.
And their union's been locked out, then they're not allowed to send us a contribution, goddammit. Go postal unions. You can send us a contribution. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties feel that they barf quite enough, thank you, without hearing about Roger Ailes' creepy, sexy time.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2016, Drift Glass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Drift Glass.
Science Fiction University, once again, we are reading your stories, Wedding in Space, Summer Vacation in Space, and we are having so much fun with these, really.
We are.
Yeah. You guys are so talented.
My God.
And we are thinking about, after the election, when we have maybe a little more time, of launching this show on its own and having two shows. So
two shows.
Mm-hmm. We will see how that goes. That would allow us to do a lot more in terms of covering science fiction books, science fiction TV shows, what we're watching on whatever stations we're watching, and basically have a mass media empire, which is, you know, always the goal.
It's the goal. But that actually increasing our staff in any way.
That's right.
You know, yes.
We want to increase our ROI.
That's right. With our SEO.
Right. Uh-huh.
I can do this all day, darling.
We can do this all day. Uh-huh. You can tell how Driftglass in his past life was a marketing major, right? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I was a technology guy for a long, long time.
You were. Yeah.
And it was, and you know what? I was perfectly happy to monkey with technology and wipe out my hard drive and start over. As long as I had 400 computers under my command and a network and a staff, that was fine.
Yeah. And nobody's allowed to eat pizza at your laptop.
No. But once it became just my laptop and me,
yeah,
I got a lot less interested in, hey, I wonder what this virus does. Hey, let's slap on a dozen new apps and see what they do.
Okay.
No, this is my only vehicle.
Yes, and you don't let the children touch it either. You have the only laptop in the house that hasn't been played with or shopped on by children. So.
And guess what? The effect of that has been, it runs smoothly for the last 2.5 years.
Yeah. Yes. All right, let's read these stories.
All right.
We're going to start with David's, and Driftglass, you're going to read this one. This is Vacation in Space.
Yes. Working title
submission. Yeah,
working title is June submission, so let's have at it. The welder's jet unexpectedly cut out, and Dale overcompensated and found himself spinning. He would have panicked if he had not already maxed out his panic days ago. Instead, he righted himself, checked his meters, and said over the comm, oxidizer out, fuel at 2/3. Just a few beats later came the reply. Oxidizer on the way, 3:12. Somewhere behind him, along the axis of the station, the spare oxidizer started moving his way. For the first time in days, Dale found himself with nothing to do but wait. He glanced up, quote-unquote, and saw something else he had not seen in even longer. A patch of ground and ocean. No, wait. It was water, but not ocean. He saw the distinctive outline of part of the Great Lakes for just a moment before it was once again hidden behind the thick brown haze that now coated the globe above, quote-unquote, him. But that moment was enough. It brought Dale back to the last time he saw one of those lakes up close. His toes dipped in the surf. It was a clean surf, one that didn't stink of salt and sea air like real oceans did. At the time, Dale was enjoying his summer vacation just after high school graduation. He and his buddies went up to go camping on Lake Michigan in the Upper Peninsula. Dale, wiggling his toes in his triple-layered spacesuit, could almost feel the sand and cool water on his bare skin. His visored face could almost feel the wind and the warm sun. And even through the sweaty, recycled, stale air of his spacesuit, he could smell the fresh air from the water. Dale closed his eyes and felt for a moment as if he was back on that beach, enjoying a warm summer's day, when his whole life was ahead of him, when anything was possible, when he had no notion that all of it would end, leaving only a handful of survivors desperately clinging to life in free fall, 100 miles above the ground with no backups and little hope. But then his vacation came to an end. Oxidizer at your 6, plug in and go. Dale gave himself a 5-second extension of his current vacation, then sighed, exhaling the last of the imagined fresh air from his tired lungs, and turned and plugged in. He was soon back to welding, back to the frenzied schedule of survival. He supposed if he really had time for a vacation, he might also have time to think about the full implications of humanity's situation. And the way things stood, nothing fit for a postcard would come to that. The end.
The end. All right. Recall. Mental vacation.
Yeah.
And he has some control over the time that he can use to daydream. And it's a vivid daydream.
It is.
You know, he dips his toe in the surf and he's on a vacation after graduation. And even though he's in the sweaty, recycled, stale air of his spacesuit, he can smell fresh air in his head. That's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
The handful of survivors desperately clinging to life in free fall was a little bit hackneyed, I thought. Just
the sentence.
Yeah, that needs to be kind of rewritten a little bit. And I would play with...
Pull back a bit, yeah.
I would play with this section of writing a little bit, write it in first person and then write it back again in third person, and see what happens to the voice, because I think at some points in the story, you're really there with Dale as a guy who's a welder who has a memory. Uh-huh. And there's other moments when you're not. And I think it would do well to sort of get into Dale's head yourself as a writer, David, and write as Dale for a few pages and see kind of what that does to the language of your writing. And then if you want to write it in third person, you'll have that language as Dale is thinking. Mm-hmm. You'll have that language in your head and it'll go more smoothly. That's mine.
That's an excellent, well, very good summary and an excellent exercise for anyone to go mm-hmm, through.
Right.
I wouldn't wait till the end of your 700-page novel to decide to rewrite it in first person or third person or first person omniscient or third person omniscient, rather, mm-hmm. or whatever. But I think it's a really good exercise for anyone who's sort of playing with a piece to figure out where to locate the voice. Is it over the shoulder of the narrator, in the head of the narrator, or from the God's eye view above the entire proceeding? I take it something really bad has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that might be, and that is the writer's problem to solve, or that is the writer's story to tell. But it would have to have been pretty swift and awful to wipe out apparently almost all of humanity very fast. So I await anxiously to hear what that catastrophe might have been.
Yeah.
I also think that there is one sentence or half a sentence too much of him inside of his suit remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Just you can probably combine them. That's all. We get where you're going with that, and that third sentence feels like it could be folded into the second sentence. And without having to write past the point where your reader's already gone past you, we see where you're going.
Right.
And I think Dale is very lucky that he vacationed on Lake Michigan when the alewives weren't all dying.
Yeah.
Because Lake Michigan don't smell so good during a big fish kill on Lake Michigan. There are times Lake Michigan, having lived right next to the Lake Michigan, and appreciated the cool breeze and the summer beaches. But there are times when Lake Michigan stinks. Mm-hmm. Stinks real bad. So good for you, Dale, for picking, for our narrator to pick a time when it was lovely out there.
Right.
But again, this has, the crisis has to have happened very swiftly. And recently, there are a few hundred people in orbit. Apparently, that's all that's left of humanity. So I'm curious as to where the writer is locating the story along the timeline of human space exploration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of people living in orbit for a long time requires an immense infrastructure to keep it going. I bet Dale is more than a welder.
Yeah.
I bet Dale has a lot of other duties. And again, as the story goes forward, I'd love to hear what else he does.
And also, I think there's an opportunity in that vacation sequence for him to have a memory of something other than just his buddies in a generic sense.
Yeah.
It would be good to maybe have a human connection with an individual, whether it's a girl, which, of course, you know, it's always should be a girl, right? But whatever it is, a best friend is fine.
Yeah.
You know, someone that he actually specifically remembers who may be dead now.
Exactly. I was going to say that would be a really good moment to say, you know, and that your friend is buried under the catastrophe or died in the great whatever.
And then does he have relationships in space, or is he utterly alone in space as this welder, and the only people he's talking to are the comm, which is automated? And so, you know, either that, or he has relationships in space and they are different than, and also the same as the ones that he had in Lake Michigan. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to move plot along with people or lack of people, depending on what you decide to do.
Indeed.
All right.
So keep going, David.
Let us know how it works out.
Yeah.
We are interested. All right.
And we're glad we gave you the impetus to write again.
Yes, he said, thanks for giving me the impetus to write again. You are welcome, David. And thank you for writing. All right. The other story we have is a wedding story, and it is from Cliff. And thank you for writing, Cliff.
Yes. I'll avoid the obvious.
You can say it. Go ahead.
These are just Cliff's notes, people.
All right.
Read it with a little charity.
The Singularity Priest's voice boomed across the mile-deep auditorium. Are there those among the assembled who would declare unfit the consummation of the Rebus, the cosmic and holy joining of bride and groom? Silence settled across the auditorium. The baleful light of the accretion disk at the center of the galaxy drifted across the 50,000 balconies, arrayed in staggered ranks, each holding a delegation of wedding attendees. A response boomed back down from the mass of attendees. We shall not let this abomination proceed! Oh, for God's sake! Snapped Tomris, who stood to the right of the groom in an ill-fitting gown. She glared up at the canyon-like slope of balconies, trying to pick out the objector among the millions gathered. Lensing fields snapped up at the edge of the wedding platform and focused in on a balcony near the furthest edge of the auditorium to display a cadaverous entity heaving itself up toward the railing, its flesh pocked with disease and metal. You shall not rob us of our blessed oblivion, it wailed, and pointed a finger up towards the radiation-blasted skies. A fleet hove into view, 10,000 Ur-Nihilist death zealots, shrieking in from behind a strange matter veil that had hid them from the sight of the wedding party. Of course it was going to be that son of a bitch, Tomris muttered. She nodded to the two sisters nearest to her in the groom's party. Boudica, Hippolyta, go tear him down. The two bounded away from the stage and up into the ranks of the balconies, armor rezzing up over their formal gowns. Tomris, called another sister, Joan. She looked over her shoulder to where Joan was pointing to see the groom running off of the stage. The bride, left standing next to the Singularity Priest, looked stunned for a moment, then raced after him. Son of a whore! Tomris shouted. Joan, you and Bredemort coordinate with the flagship. Keep those zealots off of us. She rezzed her own armor up and went chasing after the fledgling couple. All right. This is, as you say, the runaway groom in space.
Yeah. This is very, I like bridesmaids who are ready for action. You know, they're sure they have gowns up, but they're ready to rock and roll at the drop of a hat. And that's a good thing. It's very vivid. The wedding is vivid. The light from the accretion disk of the galaxy, mm-hmm. The fleet suddenly hoving into view or heaving into view.
Yeah, the Ur-Nihilist death zealots. I mean, that's just perfect, you know?
Come on. You know, I've been to this wedding. I know you have too. It is obviously a massive, more than a wedding, it is an ascension ceremony or mm-hmm. There's something a lot more hanging in the balance than just the bride and the groom. There's a part on the second page where I lose track of who's doing what.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out if... I know the groom has run off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the groom has run off with someone else.
Yeah, that fledgling couple at the very end is hard to figure out who that is. Yeah.
So I'm not sure if the groom has run off with another member of the wedding party, which would be hilarious, and also kind of nutty, unless it's part of a plot. Which would be nutty too, or if she went chasing off after her husband to be. Either way, that's just mechanical. Just read through it once or twice and be clear about what you're trying to say, where you're trying to point people. I love the rezzing sound. The rezzing up of armor is, and this is where we have a teachable moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's. The author has picked a word that sounds like a zipper going up and doesn't bother to explain the gadgetry itself.
Right.
Doesn't spend any time telling us anything about how the armor works and how it comes on, and how it knows to go over your dress and it will crush your corsage. We don't know. We don't care because we're in the middle of a chase.
Right.
And all we want to know is that armor is on and gone. And that is an author... choosing not to talk about the gadgets and doodads and whatnots in any level of detail beyond what is necessary to advance the story. And that's a very good thing to learn.
That is an author who is very confident in his use of language.
Yeah.
In just saying, no, this is rezzing. You know what rezzing is. Rezzing is where the zipper comes up and the all of a sudden the armor's on over the ill-fitting wedding dress and she can zoom off and chase the groom or fight the nihilist death zealots.
Yeah.
Up exactly. In the upper balcony and she's ready to go.
You know. That was Jack Black's other band name.
Well,
between Sonic
thinking,
Death Monkey and...
I was just thinking, like you said, these brides and bridesmaids are ready to fight.
Yeah,
They're standing there at their wedding, but they're ready to hack off with armor anytime they want, right?
This is Brienne of Tarth's wedding.
It is, it
and
is.
And she has got her sword and ready to rock and roll, and even the bride.
Mm-hmm.
The bride is getting married in, apparently, armor.
And she's got the tongue of a soldier.
Yes.
You know, she's not...
She's snapping orders.
Yep, and swearing.
Yep, so...
Good going.
You've started the story right in the middle. You've mm-hmm. gotten us off to, you shot the sheriff, as the saying goes.
Right.
On the first page, you've got us rocking and rolling. And we know there's two sides, at least to this thing, and something real bad's about to happen.
Yep. And this is really, both of these stories started right in the middle and did a really good job of doing that. Like, you're right in the story the minute you go. So... Terrific. All right. Well, thank you very much, you guys, Cliff and David. We appreciate your stories. We will be back next week with more Science Fiction University. Yay!
Yay!
Thank you, Drift Class. I love you.
My pleasure. I love you too, darling. Bye.
Bye.